It is Wednesday, October 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Spain prepares to impose direct rule on Catalonia.
The Catalan government is pushing for these talks when, you know, the Spanish government never recognized that the process even happened.
Turkey calls for a resolution to its diplomatic tensions with the United States, and singer Dolly Parton issues a new album for children. It's all ahead. Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy Wednesday appeared poised to suspend the semi-autonomy of the country's restive region of Catalonia and close its parliament. The move risked triggering civil unrest and deepening Spain's worst political crisis since a failed coup 4 decades ago. The Spanish leader asked Catalan secessionists for clarification on their announcement Tuesday that they'd earned the right to declare a breakaway state, but were suspending implementing independence pending negotiations with Madrid. Catalan President Carlos Puigdemont said the October 1st independence referendum was a clear mandate to declare an independent republic.
La mateixa solemnitat, el govern I jo mateix.
He also appealed for a lessening of tensions and calm. The Atlantic Council's Carlos Castelo tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Mr. Puigdemont, under international pressure not to break away from Spain, pleased neither his supporters nor his detractors.
What we were all ready for was either a formal declaration of independence and the government moving forward with a plan, or basically going back to square one and deciding to negotiate. What we've seen today was definitely disappointing for the pro-independence movement. There were thousands of people in Barcelona awaiting the declaration of independence, and once he mentioned the suspension, a lot of people just went home and accused the president of treason. But the people in Madrid reacted as if it was an actual declaration of independence. So I guess it was one of those little bit of this, little bit of that, but none of the important stuff was actually decided.
One pro-independence politician in Catalonia said that Mr. Puigdemont missed a historic opportunity, did he?
Well, I mean, under their eyes, they had the mandate of the referendum, 2 million votes behind them, and I think all the people that had been on the streets demonstrating and voting expected today to be D-Day, right? And so when you've gathered such momentum, stopping short of declaring independence felt underwhelming for a lot of the pro-independence movements and very confusing, honestly, because like then they went ahead and signed the Declaration of Independence anyways, which is not going to come into effect apparently until they decide to negotiate something. So we're all kind of confused as of what was this all about.
Spain has indicated that it's not going to negotiate. Will these talks ever take place?
Well, it's very tough, right? The Catalan government is pushing for these talks when, you know, the Spanish government never recognized that the process even happened. But, you know, the law that led to the referendum was illegal. The referendum itself was illegal. And so we do not recognize Catalonia's mandate to push for independence. So it's very complicated to have two parts talk to each other when they don't recognize each other. And again, like it's also very tough for the Spanish government when someone comes to the table and says, the end goal is independence, let's talk about it. I think what real talks are about is like, okay, do you want more autonomy? Is it about taxes? Do we want like more federal state? Are we reforming the constitution? But you cannot start those talks just telling everyone what the end goal is, because then the Spanish government has absolutely nothing to negotiate about.
That is Carlos Castelo of the Atlantic Council. More than 2 million Catalans voted in the referendum, with 90% voting yes, but that was only 43% of the electorate. Opponents boycotted. The country's highest court declared the referendum illegal. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, today, Sarah, is the Day of the Girl. October 11th marks the International Day of the Girl, which is a way to shine light on the inequality faced by girls around the world, but also the advances that they've achieved in education, health, and social justice. So we're seeing lots of organizations talking about this using hashtag Day of the Girl, including UNICEF. They write on social media, "When girls do better, we all do better. And UNICEF getting quite a lot of attention as well for a video that they produced featuring a number of girls from around the world talking about what they've achieved and words flashing up on the screen and how they've advanced in their young lives. And it's set to Beyonce's hit song Freedom. So anytime you attach Beyonce to something, it always ends up being trending. And this is no different for the Day of the Girl. But not just talking about the issues facing girls around the world, but working to encourage them with success stories. A lot of women sharing their success stories from when they were young girls about how they have worked to become what they are today. And as some are noting, it's not just about providing food and shelter and opportunities, many of the things in the developing world that young girls need, but confidence and love and respect, all of those intangibles that can be very supportive as well. And perhaps fitting with the fact that today is the Day of the Girl, we're getting news just now that the Boy Scouts of America have announced that for the first time they will be admitting girls and having a program where girls can enter into the Cub Scouting program and work their way all the way up and earn Boy Scouting's highest award, which is the Eagle Scout Award. Some interest in this on social media, how this is going to work, because of course there is the Girl Scouts.
The Girl Scouts, what's going to happen to them?
Exactly. So there is some confusion about that. The statement from the Boy Scouts says that it's a historic decision that comes after years of receiving requests from families and girls that they be included, and that the values of scouting are important to both young men and women. So this is getting a lot of reaction on social media, people indeed wondering how this is going to be implemented, what will happen to the Girl Scouts. And then there are the jokers that said, well, the Boy Scouts just wanted in on the cookie money. Of course, the Girl Scouts of America, known for their cookies that they sell, and they make quite a lot of money with that. So there were some jokes that maybe the Boy Scouts wanted to get in on some piece of that money. But
what are they going to be called, the Boy and Girl Scouts or something?
These are all questions that are being hotly debated on social media, and I think this is a conversation that is going to carry throughout social media as we get more answers. But that's the top line news at the moment, that the Boy Scouts are no longer just boys anymore. Girls will be allowed as well.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. North Korea says President Donald Trump has lit a fuse of war. Iraq orders the arrest of Kurdish independence election officials. President Trump rejects the claim that he wanted a big nuclear expansion. And President Trump says the NFL commissioner eventually decided to support his demand that all players stand during the national anthem. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of the moon, you may think of it as some cold, dry, and lifeless rocky orb pocked with craters. But a new NASA study suggests that the moon once had an atmosphere. The study shows that the moon was volcanically active between 3 and 4 billion years ago. Gases produced by the flowing lava would rise above the moon's surface faster than they were able to make it into space. As a result, the study suggests these volcanic gases accumulated around the moon, forming a temporary atmosphere. The NASA scientists, after analyzing volcanic moon rock samples gathered by Apollo astronauts, found they contained a variety of gases such as sulfur and carbon monoxide. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Dolly Parton releases an album for children. Calmer winds and lower temperatures have helped thousands of firefighters in the western U.S. state of California make progress in battling a collection of wildfires that broke out across the state on Sunday. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection warned that breezy and dry conditions still pose a challenge, and that by late Tuesday, the fires had burned more than 46,500 hectares. By Wednesday, authorities reported at least 17 deaths linked to the fires and said the flames had burned an estimated 1,500 homes and businesses. Among the areas affected are Napa and Sonoma counties north of San Francisco that are home to dozens of wineries that draw tourists from around the world. I spoke with VOA's Silicon Valley correspondent, Michelle Quinn, who describes the situation.
You know, this is probably one of the best days so far in some senses, which is that the temperature's dropped, the wind isn't very strong, and this gives firefighters an extra day to try to fight back the various fires. It's about 15 fires. The downside is that there are some new areas that have been opening up, and I can't really tell you why, but you know, so there's evacuations in parts of Calistoga, which is right in the heart of wine country.
Now, this is an area, as you said, that is wine country, and certainly this area depends a lot on that. What kind of an impact will this have on that area's wine business?
Well, I think that what I've seen is that, you know, a lot of grapes have been harvested already, so perhaps this year is fine. That doesn't mean that that everybody's safe, and there have been vineyards that have burned. And you know, the big impact here is, other than just the loss of life and neighborhoods completely destroyed, like gone, is really the tourist industry, which is big here. This is the big reason why people come here. They like to drive around in a beautiful green landscape, and that's certainly going to change.
Well, in your travels, you know, to the region, I mean, what does it look like at the moment?
It's kind of strangely fine where I am right now. It's a very thick air, so it's kind of hard to breathe. But in a few minutes, I'm going to be heading out to a winery in the town of Sonoma, which is surrounded by wineries and wine country. And, you know, I expect that we'll meet people who have been evacuated and who potentially have lost their homes and their businesses. So I'm, you know, I think that we'll see, you know, charred homes, neighborhoods leveled. You know, the neighborhoods leveled so badly that all that's left are like rows of chimneys because brick doesn't burn. And I know somebody who's an architect who built a kind of a camp here who built it to be fire resistant, and it burned to the ground. And she told me, you know, there's really no material you can use when the fire is that hot.
That's VOA's Michelle Quinn. She's reporting from Northern California. Turkey is calling for a normalization of relations with the United States following rising diplomatic tensions between the NATO allies. The dispute has already resulted in unprecedented restrictions on the issuance of visas by both countries. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim, speaking at a meeting of provincial governors, appeared to reach out to Washington in a bid to defuse rising diplomatic tensions.
Tabii ki biz de ülkemize yakışanı yaptık.
Our wish is that relations between the two allies get back to normal soon. We, as Turkey, will not give up on common sense at a time when regional and global tensions have been rising, Yildirim said. Relations have been deeply strained following the arrest of a local U.S. consulate employee on terrorism and espionage charges in relation to a failed coup last year against President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Those tensions have resulted in both sides severely restricting the issuance of visas. President Erdogan, Tuesday, sought to personally blame U.S. Ambassador John Buss for the tensions. Erdogan also declared that the ambassador would no longer be considered Washington's legitimate representative. Washington has strongly backed Bas's actions, reiterating its criticism of the detention of its local employee. Ambassador Bas, speaking to reporters, denied local media reports that another employee, reportedly being sought by authorities, was in hiding at the U.S. diplomatic premises. The leader of Turkey's main opposition, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, accused the Turkish government of pursuing a hostage policy and called for an immediate resolution to the crisis. Bilateral relations have also been soured by disputes over U.S. support for Kurdish fighters in Syria and Turkey's unsuccessful effort to have the U.S. extradite a cleric blamed for the failed coup. Fethullah Gulen, who lives in self-imposed exile in the U.S., denies any involvement in the attempted coup. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. A country music star is releasing a new album aimed at children. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
She owns her own amusement park in her name. She is a movie actress who's been nominated for several Academy Awards. She's been up for 49 Grammy Awards in her 53-year career, and now she's coming out with her very first children's album ever. Dolly Parton is who we're talking about today.
Wow.
That's quite an interesting name to throw around here in today's contemporary pop world.
It is. I was just going to ask you that. She's usually associated with country music.
She is. And for today, she's doing something that not just appeals to country kids, but kids worldwide. She's releasing her first children's album, which is called I Believe in You. And as I mentioned, she started her career 53 years ago. And this is her 44th album. And it's interesting that she chose to release a children's album because she and her husband, Carl Dean, unfortunately were not blessed with children, unable to have children at an early age. But Dolly has written many hits, which are enjoyed by kids and adults alike. And so she just said, you know, there's kids around the world I love and love me back. And I do so much for kids, I decided to come out with a kids album. So we're going to play a song from that album, the title track. The album is called I Believe in You. And here's the song.
Just like that little story that we've all read about, that says I can, I think I can, and I am here to shout that there's a little engine inside of all of us that says we can do anything if we just don't give up.
You know, Larry, it's interesting you said that about the fact that Dolly herself and her husband, they don't have their own children. However, she grew up in a big family. I believe she was one of 12 children herself, and because, consequently, a lot of nephews and nieces. So I have a feeling she's been around a lot of kids.
Oh, yes, and she's Miley Cyrus's godmother, and, you know, she's done so much for kids around the world. Of course, she's been on the Sesame Street show a number of times, and she's done so many things involving children. And she started a foundation a few years ago, and she's donating the proceeds from the sales of this album to her Imagination Children's Library, which is donating books for kids around America that don't have books to read. And she's donated about 100 million books so far. That's an awful lot of books. So she's definitely somebody who's been associated with children. And I had a chance to interview her. And that interview will air on Friday's Border Crossings, this week on Friday. So you'll hear Dolly Parton and I speak about the new album. And last year, she completed her first tour in 25 years.
Wow.
And she's going strong at age 71, still as bubbly and perky and happy and fun to talk to as she was many, many moons ago.
Was this the first time you interviewed her?
Was the very first time, and hopefully won't be the last time. I told her, hope we don't have to wait 25 more years for another tour. She promised me that that wouldn't be the case. But she's won so many awards and has done so many things. And, of course, 9 to 5 was a number one hit. During the interview, we spoke about her big hit, I Will Always Love You, which she sang. But it was Whitney Houston who made that song a number one song. And she tells the story of how Elvis wanted to record that song, and she said no. And she'll tell us why in the interview this Friday.
I was just going to ask you why, but
I can't
we'll
tell
have to
you,
wait.
Sarah.
We'll have to wait.
You have to listen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. That is the music of Dolly Parton. Well, in other news, powerful Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein's blockbuster scandal over sexual misconduct now includes accusations of raping three women. The New Yorker published a report on the rape allegations against Weinstein, who's accused of sexually harassing or assaulting 13 women over the decades. The New Yorker story says 16 current and former employees of the Weinstein Company and Miramax either witnessed or knew of Weinstein's sexual abuse. Weinstein was fired by the board of the Weinstein Company on Monday following an explosive New York Times report. Weinstein has apologized for his behavior, but later he alleged some of the newspaper's claims were false and said he would sue for defamation. And meanwhile, in related to that, the once powerful Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein has been suspended from the British Film Academy as revelations about his decades of sexual abuse continue to emerge. The British Academy of Film and Television Arts said in a statement Wednesday, Weinstein's membership had been suspended effective immediately. The organization, which had previously received money from Weinstein to fund its charitable work, called his alleged sexual transgressions completely unacceptable and incompatible with BAFTA's values. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply troubled by the September 27th conviction and two-year prison sentence for Crimean Tatar leader Ilmi Umerov in Russian-occupied Crimea. Mr. Umerov was convicted for his opposition to Russia's attempted annexation of Crimea and given a harsher sentence than the Russian occupation prosecutor requested. This compounds past injustices in the case, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, including his confinement for several weeks of punitive psychiatric treatment in 2016. Human Rights Watch condemned this confinement as an egregious violation of his rights. Speaking at his trial, Umerov said that the charges against him were to punish all who oppose the annexation. He vowed to appeal his sentence all the way to the European Court of Human Rights. Umerov's lawyer, Nikolai Polozhev, says he fears that the Russian prison system will not be capable of providing proper medical care to Umerov, who has Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and heart disease. The European Union called Umerov's sentencing a serious violation of his human rights and another example of persecution of the Crimean Tatar community and a further and clear illustration of the severe deterioration of human rights on the Crimean Peninsula. The Ukrainian government condemned the verdict as an illegal and politically motivated sentence that violated Umerov's human rights. Umerov is a deputy chairman of the Majlis, the Crimean Tatars' elected representative body, and has been an outspoken critic of Russia's purported annexation of Crimea and its crackdown on Crimean Tatars. Umerov's conviction follows similar rulings in Crimea on September 10th against deputy head of the Crimean Tatar Majlis, Akhtem Chihos, and on September 22nd against Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty contributor Mykola Semena. The United States calls on the Russian occupation authorities to immediately release Umerov and vacate his conviction. Crimea remains an integral part of Ukraine, and the United States remains steadfast in its support for the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.